CIR, the intern residents, the doctors union, and 1199, which is another union that facilitates our other workers in the hospital to fight the hospital to get those safeguards in place. And we've been unsuccessful, which is why we've brought it into our contract demands. But still to this point.
And Michelle, we only have 30 seconds. The significance of Bernie Sanders and mostly the New York mayor standing on the picket line with you, Zohran Mamdani.
Yes, ma'am. I think the significance is that, you know, we have the support of many different people, but I think the most important support comes from our patients, our community. I really hope our community knows that this fight is as much for us as it is for them. Mm.
I want to thank you very much for being with us. Michelle Gonzalez is a nurse at Montefiore Medical Center and an executive committee member of the New York State Nurses Association, the union representing nurses. We'll continue to follow what happens. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaru Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Safwat Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. I'll be speaking in Fort Lee after the showing of Steal the Story, Please! On January 29th at the Barrymore Film Center. Go to our website at democracynow.org. The film is showing about Democracy Now! At 7:30, January 29th. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO Fights Back end-of-year campaign. With help from our community, we exceeded our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots, independent community radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portlanders demonstrate in a Free America rally.
Portland public schools face potential budget cuts.
And the city of Minneapolis faces more oppression from ICE.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 21st, 2026. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Althea Billings. Tuesday was the one-year anniversary of President Trump's second inauguration, and across the country, advocacy groups rallied for a free America. The demonstration in Portland was organized by Women's March, the social justice organization that put on the Women's March back in 2017 when Trump was first elected. On their website, they called on participants to, quote, reject fascism and walk towards a free America. KBOO reporter Lizard was at the protest in Northwest Portland on Tuesday afternoon.
We stand today not only in opposition to ICE, the U.S. government, but in solidarity with indigenous resistance, immigrant resilience, and human dignity.
We're Americans. You don't shut us up. We only get louder.
We will not be complicit in the destruction of our lives, of our families, neighbors, communities, and this nation. We will not silently surrender our freedom and constitution. We rise together, united with dignity and with pride and our love of this nation to defend it.
Hi, I am Lee.
Could you tell us why you're out here today?
I am here for the rights of people to live and be free. To be completely honest, I feel that's what everyone deserves, is to be treated as they deserve.
Hi, my name is Catherine. I am a Portland resident of 5 years, born and raised Oregonian, and here today with my fellow community members just banding out, using our First Amendment rights to express our distress, really, in what the current administration is trying to steamroll and how they are actively trying to tear down our democracy bit by bit. So just wanted to come here, share in the pain of my community members who have been brutalized by the use of federal forces in our own city since the summer, and to express my right to free speech and freedom of assembly.
Is there anything you want to tell people who are at home?
If you are at home, you need to be a part of this fight. You don't have to take to the streets to be a part of this fight. This is a fight between you and your family members who you just don't want to discuss politics with because they're uncomfortable conversations. We're not going to be able to have uncomfortable conversations if we continue to allow our First Amendment rights to be stripped from us. So make those hard conversations with your loved ones, with your friends, because everything is political in life, and know your rights. Exercise your rights to the fullest extent before you're unable to. Your fiscal dollar is probably the loudest voice that you have. Money is tight. Nothing is getting more affordable, so we need to use our dollar.
My name is Lowell.
Is there anything you'd like to tell people who aren't here today?
Get off your ass before they take your ass from you.
That was KBOO reporter Lizard reporting on the Free America March held in Portland on Tuesday.
Portland Public Schools released a preliminary budget recommendation last week with a $50,000 budget shortfall for the 2026-27 school year. PPS officials proposed to eliminate 288 jobs. That's 180 in school and 108 jobs from the central office. With a final budget expected in June, the school district continues to struggle with limited revenue, declining enrollment, and increased operating costs. Some of the deepest cuts are proposed for coaches and interventionists positions. Schools will also see plans to blend grades in classrooms at elementary schools and increase staff-to-student ratios. The $50 million shortfall represents about 5% of the district's $1.09 billion current year operating budget. PPS has roughly 5,800 employees, which means a workforce reduction of about 5%. District officials say the budget proposal is in the early stages and will likely change following feedback from affected groups. 4 community listening sessions are set for McDaniel High School and Harriet Tubman Middle Schools on Wednesday evening. The listening sessions continue Thursday with scheduled sessions at Cleveland and Ida B. Wells High Schools.
The federal government's occupation and intimidation of Minneapolis has continued as President Donald Trump threatens to invoke the Insurrection Act. The U.S. Department of Justice issued subpoenas to Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, and 3 others to gather information they say will show Minnesota officials conspired to obstruct ICE. Additionally, the Pentagon placed 1,500 soldiers on standby for active duty in Minnesota. They're part of the Army's 11th Airborne Division. ICE agents are also violently targeting legal observers and community members. Last Friday, Judge Catherine Menendez ruled that federal agents cannot arrest or pepper spray peaceful demonstrators, including those monitoring or observing ICE activities. Despite the judge's ruling, ICE agents broke out car windows and dragged motorist Patty O'Keefe from her vehicle while she was monitoring ICE agents. One agent told her, quote, "You guys got to stop obstructing us. That's why that lesbian expletive is dead," end quote, referring to Renee Good, who was shot and killed by ICE earlier this month. A group of local police chiefs allege off-duty police officers of color were pulled over and questioned at gunpoint by ICE agents. In one encounter, a Brooklyn Park police officer was boxed in by ICE agents who demanded her paperwork and knocked her phone out of her hand as she tried to record the interaction. A family-run toy store in St. Paul is facing a retaliatory audit of its employees after one of the shop's owners openly criticized ICE's aggressive arrests. Just 3 hours later, 2 ICE agents delivered a notice demanding employment documents. Last Friday, the store was featured in an ABC News segment for handing out whistles that can be used to alert neighbors and schools when ICE agents are spotted.
The Supreme Court today appeared skeptical of President Donald Trump's bid to immediately remove Lisa D. Cook from the Federal Reserve Board. Key justices, including Trump appointees Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett, expressed concern about undermining the longstanding independence of the central bank. The court's decision has enormous ramifications for both the economy and the structure of the U.S. government. During 2 hours of oral arguments on whether Trump can immediately fire Cook, both conservative and liberal justices appeared sympathetic to the idea that she should have some ability to challenge Trump's firing. Federal Reserve Board members, by law, can only be fired for cause, which requires evidence of wrongdoing. After firing her, Trump cited allegations of mortgage fraud, which Cook denied. Cook's lawyers argue she should have notice and a chance to rebut Trump's stated reasons for firing her before she can be removed from her position. They say Trump's rationale does not meet the threshold for removal for cause. Justices from across the ideological spectrum questioned whether the allegations President Trump lodged against Ms. Cook, an unproven assertion that she engaged in mortgage fraud before taking office, were serious enough to allow the president to fire her. Justice Kavanaugh said that accepting the president's view would, quote, weaken, if not shatter, the independence of the Federal Reserve, allowing future presidents to dismiss Fed officials at will, end quote. A majority of the justices seem likely to order additional proceedings, perhaps in the lower court, meaning the Supreme Court ruling may not be the final word in the case. The justices could agree to allow Ms. Cook to keep her job in the meantime, keeping Trump from filling her post.
Many people are starting their New Year's resolutions this month, and experts say it's a great time to address the uncomfortable topic of death. Filling out advance directives and other related paperwork now can give people and their families a sense of peace when that time comes. Isabel Charlet reports.
Experts say the beginning of the year is a great time to break the silence around one of life's most important yet most avoided conversations, our wishes at the end of our lives. Research finds only one of three people have completed related paperwork like advance directives. Megan Williams is with Compassion and Choices, a national nonprofit focused on end-of-life healthcare planning and options. She says while the Pacific Northwest is ahead of the curve in providing options during this time, the conversations can still be uncomfortable. So a lot of people wait to fill out the paperwork until there's a crisis.
Our goal is to encourage everyone over the age of 18 to start having these conversations because you could unfortunately be in an accident or end up with an illness that puts you on a ventilator or has you in a place where you can't make your own choices.
Williams says Compassion and Choices has an online guide that walks people through filling out an advance directive. She says it also includes a dementia toolkit and other documents that spell out end-of-life choices for Oregon or any state. Williams explains while completing the paperwork is the goal, the conversations it sparks are also important. She says talking openly with loved ones about your wishes helps them ask questions and support you fully, especially if you can't speak for yourself.
Talking about death will not make it come faster, but it will give you a softer place to land when your time is coming. I want my loved ones to be with me and present, not waffling over what decision to make.
Williams adds the start of a new year, a new season, or some other transition moment like returning from time away from work and feeling refreshed are great times to begin talking about end-of-life options. She also encourages people to treat advance directives as living documents that they can revisit often as health or other life changes happen. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Debates over National Guard policing, immigration enforcement, and ethics investigations collide as markets react to new tariff threats, raising fresh questions about effective power and democratic guardrails. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It's a story that you usually hear in Russia. It's a common instrument that Russian authorities use in order to scare the journalists, to signal to them that they shouldn't do their work, essentially, that they shouldn't keep the government accountable.
Indiana University economics professor Konstantin Zhukov calls recent moves against journalists covering national security authoritarian. A Washington Post reporter had her home searched and her devices seized. And after restricting journalists' access to information not released by the department, the Pentagon says it's taking over the highly respected military newspaper Stars and Stripes. Meanwhile, Indiana National Guard Adjutant General Larry Munich is defending state legislation that would expand the authority of Guard MPs during emergencies there.
To carry a firearm, exercise police powers, or make an arrest. Right now, we have 300 troops helping make D.C. safe today, operating under a similar construct.
Supporters say the Indiana bill would allow a faster response to a governor's activation, but critics say it erodes a longstanding wall between military force and civilian policing. The Justice Department has now formally subpoenaed the Democratic Minnesota governor and Minneapolis mayor, saying they may have conspired to impede immigration actions. It's unclear what the status is of a possible FBI investigation into the shooting of Renee Good by an ICE officer. Six federal prosecutors in the state resigned over a Justice Department investigation into the political activities of Renee Good's widow. Minnesota pediatrician Dr. Jana Gewurz O'Brien says aggressive ICE operations are creating fear that is stopping families from getting care for their children.
We've seen moms that have called and said, my baby's having trouble breathing. I don't know if I should come in.
President Donald Trump is not backing away from tariff threats while meeting with European allies who oppose the U.S. taking Greenland. The possible import taxes and a sharp threatened EU retaliation likely caused a 2% fall in U.S. stock markets, the steepest in months. Simultaneous declines across global markets wiped out more than $1 trillion in value. The Supreme Court is expected to weigh whether the president has authority to impose sweeping country-based tariffs under the emergency declaration. An adverse ruling could take away one of Trump's favorite forms of presidential power. Polling shows strong and widespread domestic opposition to Trump's Greenland ambitions. A coalition of Ohio clean water groups is calling for an ethics investigation into Republican State Senator Brian Chavez, citing alleged conflicts tied to energy policy. Chavez spokesperson John Fortney calls them politically motivated.
This is another baseless, desperate, hollow attack funded by billionaire California special interests with the single goal of killing the oil and gas industry in Ohio.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. At 6, it's Sea Change Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, stick around for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, expect clear skies with an overnight low of 29 degrees. Wind gusts are up to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, look for clouds and an afternoon high of 43. Today in history, King Louis XVI of France was executed by guillotine at the Palace of Versailles following his conviction for high treason during the French Revolution. The quote of the day is from Danish philosopher Soren Kierkegaard, who said, quote, "Life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced."
The FBI field office confirms the search for missing Navajo girl from Tuba City, Arizona, is over. This marks the second time an alert system has been used in search of a Native American since its implementation last year. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Malika Molly Boone, a Navajo girl who'd gone missing in the community of Coal Mine near Tuba City, Arizona, marks the second time an alert system has been used in search of a Native American since its implementation last year. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, that search is now over.
The FBI Phoenix field office confirmed that Boone's body was found on Friday following a multi-agency search that included law enforcement authorities from the Arizona DPS, U.S. Marshals Service, Coconino County Sheriff's Office, and Flagstaff Police Department.
To learn that this search has ended in loss is a pain beyond words.
Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin took to social media to share his condolences, not just for Malika, but also 3-year-old Carson Apodaca.
In just the past few weeks, with the tragedy in Kienta and now this heartbreaking news from Coal Mine, our nation has endured tremendous pain. These moments remind us just how sacred our children are and how deeply connected every life is within our Navajo community. May we honor Malika's spirit by cherishing and protecting every child across the Navajo Nation.
The investigation into Malika's death is being handled by the FBI and Navajo Department of Criminal Investigations. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
On the opening day of the New Mexico legislative session Tuesday, a protest was held at the state capitol in Santa Fe. KUNM's Jeanette Didio spoke to indigenous people at the event.
Hundreds of New Mexicans rallied and marched up the steps towards the roundhouse. Oglala Sioux Nation member John Swiftbird led the march with other Native drummers.
The energy always gets to the people. People have always resonated to the singing and to the energy of it.
He's been advocating back and forth between New Mexico and South Dakota ever since the 2016 protest in Standing Rock against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Longtime activist elder Kathy Sanchez from San Ildefonso Pueblo gave a blessing and told attendees to not give up.
Everything that is brought forth in a good way will survive because all of us are not giving up on each other.
CSN Hope from the Mescalero Apache and Diné Nations is an advocate for the Southwest Solidarity Network and Revolutionary Two-Spirit Collective. Hope is advocating for land and water protections and says it's important for Indigenous people to understand and exercise their rights.
It's the only reason that we have them is because people before us, our ancestors before us, have fought for us to be here, have fought for us to have the right to, you know, live.
She wants lawmakers and the governor to continue upholding tribal consultation on Native issues and says she and other advocates will continue to fight for tribal rights. I'm Jeanette Didios.
The founder of a missing and murdered Indigenous people organization is sharing the faces of those affected by the crisis. KLCC's Brian Bull reports on a new exhibit in Salem, Oregon.
Amanda Freeman founded Umpqua Advocacy and has displayed nearly three dozen photos of Native people who've lost a relative or have suffered domestic violence or addiction. It's titled Umpqua Munkshlush Insaika Shawash Dilakum, which means healing our Indigenous relatives. Red handprints and a long red trailing dress adorn the walls and wrap around each portrait. Freeman says she wants visitors to leave with one impression.
I would like them to remember that we're not disposable. I would like them to leave with the mindset of, let me share this information because I had no idea. Because any awareness is good awareness.
A reception and artist talk will be held January 28th. The exhibit runs through February 6th at the Gretchen Schutte Art Gallery at Chemeketa Community College. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Conservation groups have filed a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency's approval of an insecticide that falls in the PFAS class. They're calling it a worrisome trend in chemical oversight. Catherine Carley has the story in New Hampshire.
Conservation groups have filed a lawsuit challenging the Environmental Protection Agency's recent approval of a chemical which falls into the PFAS or forever chemical category. The insecticide isocycloserum was approved for use on lawns and golf courses, as well as numerous fruits, vegetables, and grains. Nathan Donnelly with the Center for Biological Diversity says former industry lobbyists now working for EPA are ignoring scientific consensus regarding the dangers to human health.
It really gets it how much influence the pesticide industry has over the approvals of these products in this country when you can get a forever pesticide approved.
PFAS contamination is widespread in New Hampshire and has been detected in 30% of public water sources and at former industrial sites like Pease Air Force Base in Portsmouth. EPA officials claim to find no health risks for the chemical when used as directed. A provision denying people the right to sue chemical companies for non-disclosure of potential health hazards was recently removed from a federal funding bill. Chemical giants like Bayer and Syngenta have been lobbying for protection from what they call scientifically unsound lawsuits. New Hampshire's attorney general has already secured some $65 million from PFAS manufacturers. Donnelly says it would be worrisome to exempt the entire industry from liability as more chemicals are approved.
If we take those people's ability to hold these companies to account away, it just kind of becomes the Wild West, and we're not going to have the protections in place that we as a people deserve and expect.
New Hampshire was one of the first states to adopt drinking water standards for PFAS and filed a 2019 lawsuit on behalf of residents against PFAS manufacturers. Money received from settlements will be used to provide loans and grants to impacted public water systems. For New Hampshire News Connection, I'm Catherine Carley.
Attorneys who handle auto-related cases have some advice on how to avoid a yo-yo car financing scam where they call buyers back in and ask them to sign new financing deals on lesser terms. Suzanne Potter has more.
Experts in California consumer law are warning car buyers about yo-yo scams where people take the car home but then get called right back into the lot a few days later to sign new financing paperwork, often at a higher rate. Many buyers don't realize that the dealer can cancel the contract within 10 days. They're supposed to give people their money back. But attorney Gregory Babbitt with the Auto Fraud Legal Center in San Diego says some may be untruthful, telling clients that the financing fell through or pressuring people if they resist a new offer.
They tell them that they're not going to get their down payment back if they cancel the deal because they want them to sign a new contract. Those are the types of abuses that are going on every day, all the time.
New car dealers who are on the up and up try to make the original finance contract work because if they take it back, they'll have to resell it as a used vehicle. Buyers can protect themselves by knowing their rights. They can also get pre-approved financing through a credit union or use that pre-approval to negotiate a better rate at the dealership. Oxnard attorney Sparky Abraham says he has seen cases where the dealer missed the 10-day deadline, tried to take the car back anyway, and got nasty when the buyer tried to enforce the original deal.
If the client tries to assert their rights under the contract, the dealer sometimes will just go nuclear and go straight to the police and report the car stolen, even though clearly it wasn't. And the client can get arrested. I've seen clients lose their jobs. I've seen clients get prosecuted for stealing the car for many, many, many months before the charges are finally dropped.
Another variation on the scam involves a trade-in vehicle where the buyer owes more than it is worth. There have been cases where the dealer says they can't return the person's trade-in because it has already been sold, then says they won't pay off the negative equity on the trade-in unless the buyer signs a new financial agreement. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The electric vehicle market took a big blow when the Trump administration killed the tax credits, but experts say it's rebounding. Suzanne Potter has the latest.
Last fall, when the Trump administration eliminated tax credits for electric vehicles, the EV market tanked 20% for used models and 50% for new EVs. But industry analysts say there's still reason to be optimistic. According to new research from Cox Automotive, the EV market only saw a decline of around 2% last year when compared to 2024. Liz Naiman is Director of Market Insights at Recurrent, an EV data company. She says used EVs tend to be cheaper and have fewer miles and better tech compared to a used car that runs on gas, and there will be a greater supply of them in the near future.
One of the side effects of the Inflation Reduction Act was that a lot of people leased new EVs. Over a million of those used EVs are going to be hitting the market. Those are going to be 2 to 3 year old cars, still under warranty, and at super affordable prices.
The Trump administration claimed that the tax credits, worth $7,500 for new EVs and $4,500 for used models, were an unfair mandate from the Biden era. Trump also blocked California's vehicle emissions standards, which incentivized productions of EVs. Stephanie Valdez-Streedy is Director of Industry Insights for Cox Automotive, which owns Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book. She notes that many manufacturers like Hyundai, Nissan, and Chevrolet are developing new, lower-cost EV models.
61% of EV vehicle models are over $65,000. And so if we want mass adoption, we really need more affordable, compelling products, which I think we're going to be able to see in the next few years.
Experts add that EV adoption will grow as charging infrastructure becomes more accessible and reliable. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is afraid to guess where Trump will invade next.
If I said the U.S. government was invading one of its own cities, you'd ask how a U.S. city could be taken over by a foreign power. I'd shrug my shoulders and say, maybe Trump thinks democracy is a hostile foreign power. These are times we've never seen before. Yeah, we stole the land around the Panama Canal, took parts of Mexico, but Greenland? Because he didn't win the Peace Prize? And with so much other, how could this happen here, and why can't anyone stop him taking place, stirring rage, fear, and helplessness? I look at history, and all I learn is how to bring back a country after it's been ravaged by autocracy and war. We don't want that here. But using the Department of Justice against elected officials who challenge your authority is big in the autocrat Democrats' playbook, as is changing history. We have many serious problems, but none can be solved as long as Trump has unfettered power, and a new Democrat majority Congress won't be in power until next year. We've seen what chaos Trump can create in less than a day. We can't give him a year. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 21st, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Dave Johnson, Hannah Francis, and Lizard. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Suzanne Potter, Nadia Ramlagan, and Catherine Carley. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by